Mark Brilouet vertelt. Een swingende podcastreeks over de meest iconische hits en hun al even legendarische uitvoerders.
Op Roy Orbison's muziek kan u moeilijk een tijdslabel kleven. Nog een typisch genre. Ook al kwam de man uit Texas en nam hij het merendeel van zijn platen in Nashville op, toch kan u niet beweren dat zijn platen country getint zijn. Hij kon als geen ander in 3 minuten tijd een verhaal neerzetten, de climax in kluis. En dat, samen met zijn unieke stem, maakte van Roy Orbison een fenomeen, ook al liep zijn carrière niet altijd over rozen. Integendeel. De Big O overleed de 6e december 1988 op 52-jarige leeftijd aan een hartaanval. Hij had enkele maanden voordien de laatste hand gelegd aan de opname van zijn LP Mystery Girl, in samenwerking met onder andere T-Bone Burnett en George Harrison, en had de tv-show Roy Orbison and Friends, A Black and White Night, ingeblikt, met als speciale gasten onder meer Bruce Springsteen en K.D. Lang. Enkele maanden voordien hadden we nog dit gesprek met hem, en daarin kwam uiteraard ook zijn eerste groep, de Wink Westerners, ter sprake.
Yes, that was my first group when I was about 15 years old. Uh-huh. Had a group at drums and saxophone, piano, guitar and bass. We didn't know it was rockabilly. I started recording then when I was about 18 for Sun Records with Elvis Presley and Johnny Cash and Carl Perkins and Jerry Lee Lewis, and they called us rockabilly. Uh-huh. It wasn't really rock and roll, they didn't think, and it wasn't hillbilly, and it wasn't so it wasn't country, and it wasn't exactly rhythm and blues, so they didn't know what it was.
That must have been a giant step for you, Sun Records.
It was my first, I got my first hit record, and
Oobie Doobie.
Oobie Doobie, and it started everything rolling for me, and it was a lot of fun. We were excited just to be able to play.
Yeah. Did you meet Elvis over there?
Yeah, my first tour ended in Memphis, and when I got to Memphis, Oobie Doobie was number one in the city, and we played an outdoor show, and Elvis came to the show and was introduced at intermission, and we talked afterwards, and he complimented me on the show and everything, and then we sort of ran around together for a couple of years there in Memphis before we went into the army.
Velen vonden ook dat Roy's stem niet geschikt was voor deze rockabilly-toestanden. Gelukkig ging het met zijn songs veel beter, want in 1958 namen de Everly Brothers een nummer van hem op, een song die Roy Orbison aan zijn eerste vrouw had opgedragen, Claudette. Via een omweg langs platenmaatschappij RCA en producer Chet Atkins komt Roy Orbison terecht bij het Monument-label van Fred Foster. Het is hier dat zijn handelsmerk zou worden klaargestoomd, namelijk het gebruik van zijn falsetto-stemgeluid, reeds te horen op het allereerste nummer dat hij bij deze firma op laat zette, Pretty One. Nadien volgde nog Uptown, maar met het derde nummer was het knal in de roos, Only the Lonely. Orbison had dit nummer eigenlijk geschreven voor Elvis Presley, maar door allerlei omstandigheden liep de afspraak mis en ook de Everly Brothers aarzelden wat te lang om het op single uit te brengen. Dus besloot Roy Orbison maar zelf het nummer op te nemen en het werd regelrecht een nummer 1.
I had stopped by Elvis's on the way into Nashville to sing Only the Lonely for him, to see if he wanted to record it. He had just gotten out of the army and it was his first recording session coming. But I had driven from Texas and I got there about 6 o'clock in the morning. So Elvis sent a note, said we're all still all over the place and sleeping and everything. I'll see you in Nashville. So I got to Nashville and we were going to record Only the Lonely, and so we booked the session time. I said, let's go on in, I'm ready. And the guy said, no. He said, the studio's booked for 3 days and nights. And I said, well, book me for 3 days and nights. I got kind of ready to go then, because I couldn't even get in to record my song because of Elvis.
Yeah, it was 16 weeks at number one in England and number one in America for a long time, and then dropped back to number two and then back to number one. It was really big internationally. A lot of artists at that time, I was signed with London Decca, so they had representation in Europe. And so they told me that Only the Lonely was number one in Europe.
Opmerkelijk aan Roy Orbison's eerste nummer 1 hit was dat hij er bij producer Fred Foster op aandrong om violen te gebruiken tijdens de opname. En dat was erg ongebruikelijk voor de rockgetinte muziek van die tijd. Roy Orbison wou tijdens de opname geen enkele instrumentale beperking. En dit zou ook het basispatroon worden voor zijn andere grote hits zoals In Dreams, Runnin' Scared en Blue Angel.
During the recording sessions, you insisted on using strings.
Yes,
that was very unusual.
Yeah, it was. It was for rock and roll or pop music to have strings at the time. It had just started, really. And I thought, though, that since if you're going to make records, you shouldn't be limited. You should have access to everything.
But that was an enormous gap between Ooby Dooby and Only the Lonely.
It
set a certain kind of pattern for your other records.
Yeah, I spent 2 or 3 years there just writing songs and touring. Mm-hmm. And so that when I got the chance to sing again, I had my co-writer, Joe Melson, and I had been writing for 6 months or so before I ever got the record contract. And then we kept writing, so it was good. That we were well prepared.
A lot of present-day famous pop stars admit that they idolize you. Bruce Springsteen, Chris Isaac. Are you flattered?
Yes, we're friends. I met Chris in Los Angeles called him to come and help me out with a television show, and he was on his way over here, I think, at the time. Bruce and I have been we're kindred souls. We both love music, and we both appreciate what each other does, and that's great. To still be right in the mainstream of everything.
Who do you admire besides Chris Isaac?
Bob Seger, Bono, and U2, just a lot of people. You know, I'm a big fan of music itself, and usually the top 10 or top 20.
Elvis Presley once said, Roy Orbison is the greatest singer in the world. Big O, one of the few living legends. But that doesn't stop you from making new records.
No, I'm right in the middle of a brand new album for Virgin Records. And it's a lot of fun. And we've been working on it a few months. And I've done a couple of songs for films, which will be out this month. Mm-hmm. One is called Hiding Out. I did Crying. The song Crying with K.D. Lang as a duet. And then another film called Less Than Zero. I recorded a song called Life Fades Away, and Rick Rubin produced that. Mm. And that movie will be out this month as well. So I'm still recording. Yeah.
Who has chosen T-Bone Burnett as a producer?
Virgin Records introduced me to T-Bone, and we met at my home, and then talked a little while, and got to know each other a little bit and started writing some songs. And so we all agreed that he was the one.
He's working together with you on your last album, though.
He's written a song for me.
He's written a song.
Mm-hmm. And
a real pop song?
I haven't. He sang it for me backstage, but just a verse or so. So I haven't heard the finished song. I'll get to hear that when I get back. But a lot of us got together for this sort of television show. We had Elvis Presley's old rhythm group to play drums, bass, and guitar, and piano. And then for singers, we had J.D. Souther and Bonnie Raitt, Jackson Brown, Jennifer Warnes, and then rhythm guitar, Elvis Costello, and electric rhythm, Bruce Springsteen.
Must be a very expensive
And so we had a big time and good fun.
Yes.